Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 23 of the Hero Bells podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I guess if you tune in nowadays, I don't think you do. I think you just kind of click a link and connect, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, this series is about mindset. I'm reading from the book Mindset by Dr. Carol Dweck. And the last two episodes, I talked about the negative sides of praise and positive labels. And then the first installment of this series was all about how to change your mindset from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset. All three of these episodes tie into each other. So if you haven't listened to episode 21 and 22, I suggest you do that. If not, I'm sure this will still make some sense. But anyway, I love psychology for how much introspection and investigation that's involved. When we think of athletes or performance training or working out, we know that there's a space or frame in which our minds need to be to achieve the necessary effects. We seek a burn, a lack of breath, a fast heart rate, or just an overall solid performance of form and fortitude. What is at the top of the mindsets? What mindset does one need to see above the mist of the mountaintop? Most of us stay at the tree line. There are people who are above us all, not because they were born with gifts. More often, it's because they have tried harder. They were not quick to accept praise or rarely got it from their peers. They were early adopters of some of the most primal evolutionary technology, the champion's mindset. Again, I say primal in the historical and evolutionary sense. If you think of all the greatest people to have lived, from conquerors, generals, artists, activists, popes, and politicians, soldiers and athletes, and even entrepreneurs, you know that for all their success, they don't have the mindset of someone who thinks about or envisions losing. They know that losing could have dire consequences that were real-world savage ways of losing. A politician can lose, therefore his or her entire community could be out of work and cause real suffering. Artists gamble on creating work good enough to sell and not sell out, or else starve. In most creative processes, having stress is something of a balance in order to create anything good. So starvation is one hell of a motivator. Leadership of any kind requires that you are the bravest. Champions of any magnitude are willing to go to the deepest depths to reach the highest of peaks. We don't all need to be champions or desire to be. We just wish we were there already. Our actions prove it. The champion's life doesn't come with a field manual. It isn't a bed of roses, no pleasure cruise, but they do things that champions do. Perhaps the most common representation of high risk, high reward, with the highest danger available in our everyday lives, is athletics, sport in particular. War is just as accessible, but the danger is incredibly high. Artistry, too, is accessible, but the danger is fairly low. Athletics is the Goldilocks pursuit, the best bang for the buck for everyone involved. Which could be a good argument for why athletes are paid so much. It doesn't explain why soldiers are paid so little, but I suppose doing it for the money isn't good for one's mindset either. No one has the greatness gene as a genetic gift unless someone also has the gene giving them the constitution to wield it. It isn't a talent gene or a performance gene. It's a true grit gene, if genes have much to do with it. The mindset of a champion is an opportunity that a person must recognize, act, and persist with. Like I said last episode, we talked about the downsides of praise, how praise negatively affects the mind like a poison. So please listen to those episodes. And if you're not following me on Facebook at Hero K-Bells and Instagram at Hero_K-Bells and YouTube at Hero Bells, please do so. On YouTube, you can also get a bunch of free workouts, challenges, and more. For now, we get into episode 23, The Mindset of a Champion. Dr. Carol Dweck goes further into stories of a few that were talented and the fewer still that had the right mindset. Sports, the mindset of a champion. In sports, everybody believes in talent, even or especially the experts. In fact, sports is where the idea of the natural comes from. Someone who looks like an athlete, moves like an athlete, and is an athlete without trying. So great is the belief in the natural talent that many scouts and coaches search only for naturals, and teams will vie for each other to pay exorbitant amounts to recruit them. Billy Beane was a natural. Everyone agreed he was the next Babe Ruth, but Billy Beane lacked one thing: the mindset of a champion. As Michael Lewis tells us in Moneyball, by the time Beane was a sophomore in high school, he was the highest scorer on the basketball team, the quarterback of the football team, and the best hitter on the baseball team, batting 500 in one of the toughest leagues in the country. His talent was real enough, but the minute things went wrong, Beane searched for something to break. Quote, "It wasn't merely that he didn't like to fail. It was as if he didn't know how to fail. As he moved up in baseball from the minor leagues to the majors, things got worse and worse. Each at-bat became a nightmare, another opportunity for humiliation, and with every botched at-bat, he went to pieces." As one scout said, quote, "Billy was of the opinion that he could never make an out." Sound familiar? Did Beane try to fix his problems in constructive ways? No, of course not, because this is a story of the fixed mindset. Natural talent should not need effort. Effort is for the others, the less endowed. Natural talent does not ask for help. It is an admission of weakness. In short, the natural does not analyze his deficiencies and coach or practice them away. The very idea of deficiencies is terrifying. Being so imbued with the fixed mindset, Beane was trapped. Trapped by his huge talent. Beane, the player, never recovered from the fixed mindset, but Beane, the incredibly successful major league executive, did. How did this happen? There was another player who lived and played side by side with Beane in the minors and in the majors, Lenny Dykstra. Dykstra did not have a fraction of Bean's physical endowment or natural ability, but Beane watched him in awe. As Beane later described, quote, "He had no concept of failure. And I was the opposite," end quote. Beane continues, "I started to get a sense of what a baseball player was, and I couldn't see it wasn't me. It was Lenny." As he watched, listened, and mulled it over, it dawned on Beane that the mindset was more important than talent. And not long after that, as part of a group that pioneered a radically new approach to scouting and managing, he came to believe that scoring runs, the whole point of baseball, was much more about the process than about talent. Armed with these insights, Beane, as a general manager of the 2002 Oakland Athletics, led his team to a season of 103 victories, winning the division championship and almost breaking the American League record for consecutive wins. The team had the second lowest payroll in baseball. They didn't buy talent. They bought mindset. You can derive already that if you're overthinking, you screwed up a long time ago. I know that when I have gone into various difficult scenarios with bravado rather than confidence, I would buckle under my own pressure like a house of cards. It was partly a lack of preparation too, more often than not. I used to be a landscape construction foreman, and in all truth, I wasn't qualified for the job. I didn't even think I belonged there, and worse, that I was above the work. Highly egotistical, to say the least. Excuse me. I actually hated the work, which isn't all that uncommon in that line of work. However, my attitude was that I was talented, or at least above this line of work. Long story short, in a sense, I was overqualified, but in a different field. So I shouldn't have to try hard or suffer in any way. My ego thought the work was the same thing. After 2 years of doing this work, I started to realize my attitude wasn't making things better. Therefore, my work and reputation were spiraling. The idea of being talented or above something was ruining my reality, and my personality itself began to buckle. What got me to being a foreman aside from hard work was bravado. So I didn't fully believe in myself. That being said, this job made me start to believe in myself. I guess over time it did. I started finding myself in scenarios that I didn't think I could handle. And when I got my shit together mentally, the work seemed to just flow out of me. I prepared and allowed to make mistakes, and also for my subordinates to make mistakes. This made my work improve and made me and everyone around me happy and fulfilled. Dr. Dweck continues with the idea of the natural. Now you see it, now you don't. Physical endowment is not like intellectual endowment. It's visible. Size, build, agility are all visible. Practice and training are also visible, and they produce visible results. Would you think that this would dispel the myth of the natural? You could see Muggsy Bogues at 5'3" playing NBA basketball, and Doug Flutie, a small quarterback who played for the New England Patriots and the San Diego Chargers. You could see Pete Gray, the one-armed baseball player who made it to the major leagues. Ben Hogan, one of the greatest golfers of all time who is completely lacking in grace. Glenn Cunningham, the great runner who had badly burned and damaged legs. And Larry Bird and his lack of swiftness. You can see the small or graceless or even disabled ones who make it, and the godlike specimens who don't. Shouldn't this tell people something? Boxing experts relied on physical measurements called tails of the tape to identify naturals. They included measurements of the fighter's fist, reach, chest expansion, and weight. Muhammad Ali failed these measurements. He was not a natural. He had great speed, but he didn't have the physique of a great fighter. He didn't have the strength, and he didn't have the classical moves. In fact, he boxed all wrong. He didn't block punches with his arms and elbows. He punched in rallies like an amateur. He kept his jaw exposed. He pulled back his torso to evade the impact of oncoming punches, which Jose Torres said was, quote, like someone in the middle of a train track trying to avoid being hit by an oncoming train, not by moving to one side or the other, but by running backwards. Sonny Liston, Ali's adversary, was a natural. He had it all, the size, the strength, and the experience. His power was legendary. It was unimaginable that Ali could beat Sonny Liston. The matchup was so ludicrous that the arena was only half full for the fight. But aside from his quickness, Ali's brilliance was his mind, his brains, not his brawn. He sized up his opponent and went for the mental jugular. Not only did he study Liston's fighting style, but he closely observed what kind of person Liston was out of the ring. Quote, I read everything I could where he had been interviewed. I talked with people who had been around him or had talked with him. I would lay in bed and put all the things together and think about them and try to get a picture of how his mind worked, end quote. And then he turned it against him. Why did Ali appear to go crazy before each fight? Because, Torres says, he knew that a knockout punch is the one they don't see coming. Ali said, quote, Liston had to believe that I was crazy, that I was capable of doing anything, and he couldn't see nothing to me at all but mouth, and that's all I wanted him to see. Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Your hands can't hit what your eyes can't see. Ali's victory over Liston is boxing history. A famous boxing manager reflects on Ali. Quote, he was a paradox. His physical performance in the ring was absolutely wrong, yet his brain was always in perfect working condition, end quote. Quote, he showed us all, and he continued with a broad smile written across his face, that all victories come from here, hitting his forehead with his index finger, and then he raised his pair of fists saying, not from here. That didn't change people's mind about physical endowment. No, we just look back at Ali now with our hindsight and see the body of a great boxer. It was gravy that his mind was so sharp and that he made up amusing poems, but we still think his greatness resided in his physique. And we don't understand how the experts failed to see that greatness right from the start. One thing that Dr. Carol Dweck touched on unintentionally or otherwise was that Ali would think about how Sonny Liston's mind worked, but she said he pictured it. I'm not sure if anyone listening follows fighting, MMA or combat sports, but some of the greatest and most spectacular victories come from upsets. Conor McGregor, knocked out Jose Aldo in 13 seconds, and Jorge Masvidal knocked out Ben Askren in less than that to beat the record for the fastest knockout. These recent victories, among others, occurred due to careful study, practice, mindset, and visualization. This component is something of a mystery to many people because they lack a practiced imagination. Albert Einstein said himself that imagination is more important than knowledge. I think these fighters knew this inherently and expressed it in beautiful displays of skill and vision because they visualized their opponent's mistakes and physically practiced exploiting it. Fight fan or not, you can watch these fights. It isn't difficult to appreciate. With all the components put together in training, the result was more likely to happen because the necessary flow state toward victory was more probable. Back to the book. Michael Jordan wasn't a natural either. He was the hardest working athlete perhaps in the history of the sport. It is well known that Michael Jordan was cut from the high school varsity team. We laugh at the coach who cut him. He wasn't recruited by the college he wanted to play for, which is North Carolina State. Well, weren't they foolish? He wasn't drafted by the first two NBA teams that could have chosen him, because now we know that he was the greatest basketball player ever. And we think it should have been obvious from the start. When we look at him, we see Michael Jordan. But at that point, he was only Michael Jordan. When Jordan was cut from the varsity team, he was devastated. His mother says, quote, "I told him to go back and discipline himself," end quote. Boy, did he listen. He used to leave the house at 6 a.m. to go practice before school. At the University of North Carolina, he constantly worked on his weaknesses, his defensive game, and his ball handling and shooting. The coach was taken aback by his willingness to work harder than anyone else. Once, after the team lost the game of the season, Jordan went and practiced his shots for hours. He is preparing for the next year. Even at the height of his success and fame, after he had made himself into an athletic genius, his dogged practice remained legendary. Former Bulls assistant coach John Buck called him, quote, "a genius who constantly wants to upgrade his genius," end quote. For Jordan, success stems from the mind. Quote, "the mental toughness and the heart are a lot stronger than some of the physical advantages you might have. I've always said that I've always believed that," end quote. But other people don't. They look at Michael Jordan and they see a physical perfection that led inevitably to his greatness. Perhaps there are a number of people who would dispute the claim that he's the best ever. You know, there's your, what's that guy's name? I don't follow basketball at all. But I mean, I know who Kobe Bryant is. LeBron James, I can't believe I didn't think of that name. But people argue that he's the greatest of all time. But considering the level of talent and hardworking basketball players that exist today, his work ethic clearly set the benchmark for what other basketball players or athletes alike would measure themselves to. But carrying on, what about Babe Ruth? Now, he was clearly no vessel of human physical perfection. He was the guy with the famous appetites and a giant stomach bulging out of his Yankee uniform. Wow, doesn't that even make him even more of a natural? Didn't he just carouse all night and then kind of saunter to the plate the next day and punch out home runs? The Babe was not a natural either. At the beginning of his professional career, Babe Ruth was not that good a hitter. He had a lot of power, power that came from his total commitment each time he swung the bat. When he connected, it was breathtaking, but he was highly inconsistent. It's true that he could consume astounding amounts of liquor and unheard of amounts of food. After a huge meal, he would eat one or more whole pies for dessert. But he could also discipline himself when he had to. Many winters, he worked out the entire offseason at the gym to become more fit. In fact, after the 1925 season, when it looked as though he was washed up, he really committed himself to getting in shape, and it worked. From 1926 through 1931, he batted at .354, averaging 50 home runs a year and 155 runs batted in. Robert Kramer, his biographer, said, quote, Ruth put on the finest display of sustained hitting that baseball had ever seen. From the ashes of 1925, Babe Ruth rose like a rocket, end quote. Through discipline. You can see how when you put all these things together and you put your hard work, you're able to realize the potential. Everyone has potential. No one likes not living up to their potential. No one likes hearing their parents say they don't live up to their potential. Everyone's got potential, but it always takes effort to have potential realized. Unfortunately, it feels like I'm learning that late in life. But maybe a lot of people are. It's a lot to think about. If you hear any doors slamming, I apologize. I do live in an apartment building that's got paper-thin walls. We see that our athletes become models and analogs. They're the benchmarks for which we set to aspire to, and with the right mindset, plan to supersede them. Athletes in many games are the analogs for war and tactics. From chess to soccer, basketball, football, fighting, obviously, many team sports, as well as Olympic sports. War might be the area of human existence with the highest of consequences, with the chance for the highest of glory. We don't want war, and war is not enjoyable, but our analogs of it are. We love our athletes because we live vicariously through them and their achievements. Their victories and wars feel a lot like ours too. Although we tend to believe in our athletes, we don't believe in ourselves the same. We assume they have talent, and that's what gets them to the dance. Maybe. But the hard work is really the ticket that opens the door for potential to be realized. If we know that hard work, careful study, practice, visualization, and mindset are necessary, is it possible that your dreams of achievement could already exist? Is it just a matter of time? One could say that life happens when you're busy making other plans, which sounds very true. We have all had instances in our lives when things didn't go to plan and it seemingly fell apart. Was the house built on sand to begin with? Was the mindset truly unshakable as would require? A good practice to do is to ask yourself questions. Ask yourself or your better self this. Despite all that is going on right now and everything that seems to be going wrong, what would a champion do? You might be thinking of the old meme, what would Jesus do? I ask myself all the time, what would the best version of myself do in XYZ scenario? XYZ for you Americans. It's very effective at changing your mindset to something productive. Perhaps our emotions will override our logic, and you might say, yeah, well, my whole family just died in a car crash. Emotionally, you would think how tragic this is and how justifiable it would be to just take it easy or give up. But our greatest examples in life and athletics were never deterred, even though they got their asses kicked. Maybe you have good parents, and they had to not eat for days just to feed you. They sacrificed. And that shit is depressing. And some people give up. But the good parents have and should have the mindset to win over the long term. Losing wasn't an option for your parents. Your parents didn't visualize a failed future for very long. And only the thoughts of the better neighborhood, the better school, the bigger house, and so on remained in the forefront. That is the mindset of a champion too. Most people have moments in their lives where everything came together despite the odds because they were consistent. When the resolve was unflinching, their vision was clear as day. Their practice was everything, and their mindset was growing. We have all those moments in life. You have it too, in you. We all have a parental voice in our head that is truthful and loving. We all can have this true grit of the mindset of a champion. The question is, how bad do you want it?
Hey everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope this podcast was useful to you. I want to let you know that I have more tips and workouts available on YouTube that will also help you along the way of your training. Just search Hero Bells and please comment. I love comments. Like and subscribe, turn on notifications, and check in often. Thanks so much again. Have a great day.